out of Knoxville, Tennessee. That's a band called the V-Roys. The song is called Strange. It's a really good tune. The band was a favorite of critics. I sure liked them, but they didn't stick around. That's a great song. You ought to check it out sometime. We're talking with Tom DeLong of Angels and Airwaves and Blink 182 about his project Secret Machines. And we've heard a lot of stuff here tonight. The idea that there is another intelligence operating among us that is referred to as the others, that they sort of mess with us, that there are projects and people within government and outside of government that are trying to figure this stuff out. But the overall picture is pretty grim. You know, we folks who talk about UFO stuff on a regular basis, the subject of disclosure comes up. Hey, we're ready. We're ready. We know we can handle it. Tell us the full story. And it makes you wonder, you know, are we really ready for the full story? If the truth is that we humans are an agricultural product, are we ready to hear that? When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines. I have one more story I want to hear Tom tell us, and then we'll hear what's on your mind as well here on Coast to Coast AM. So, Tom, before the break, you were going to tell us about something dramatic that happened 36 months ago. What is it?
There was an alert that went out that all of our nuclear weapons and the weapons that are at the tip of the spear for NATO, so it's all of NATO's weapons, that over a third of them were simultaneously being shut down within our oceans by UFOs that were zipping around and shutting these things down. And I think, you know, what's scary about there is actually another part of the story, and the mechanisms by which that keep a lot of those online come from space, and then those mechanisms in space were being shut down at the exact same time. So it had to do with space and the oceans. And they put together, I know somebody that had to go into a very secure location and go through all these different levels of security to go to another hidden location, and there was a guy in a suit that says you're going to lead an investigation on this and figure out what went wrong. And the team that was put together for this was like first-year staff, first-year soldiers, like a communication soldier and like a, you know, some enlisted guy, you know.
What?
And the whole point is that they didn't want to find the answer. So when NATO comes asking and all the countries come asking, like, who's shutting down all of our weapons, they go say, oh, we ran an investigation. We had this, you know, this hack team that we put together. And,
Couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, it's just a big cover, you know, because they're actively working on it. But, you know, they don't want people to know what the real work is, you know.
You know, what makes me worry even more is that whether it could be the Russians, that they've got some technology that these others gave to them just to mess with us.
Well, that is part of the story. And it's a very, very specific and clear part of the story that I've been given that I will be communicating. And that will be in the books, but the docuseries, I'll talk about that quite a lot. There is a major advancements that Russia has, that we have, that China has, based on technology that has either been given by design or given by accident. I personally, from everything I'm hearing, it seems to look like it was given by design. Once again, like I told you earlier, quote, to see who is the stronger. And that's a scary thought, you know, to give weaponry like that and to step back and say, now go kill each other and we'll work with the ones that are left over. So like you said it the best. It is this crazy complex game of chess that's going on.
You know, we've been in this a long time, and I've been right there pounding the pulpit along with everybody else, saying we're ready for disclosure. Tell us the truth. End this cover up. And you have to step back and wonder sometimes, is that the case? And the longer people are in this field, some of the colleagues that I work with over the years, the people whose opinions I respect the most, all sort of gravitate to that position. Hey, maybe this is not such a good idea, because this stuff could be profoundly disturbing to get the full picture, that we might be an agricultural product, that there is some kind of entity that might as well be a god, or the, You know, I'm thinking about the stories of Skinwalker Ranch that we've written about, where this thing at best is ambivalent, but it can do all kinds of stuff. It seems to feed off of fear. It can be very dark and threatening at times. I remember laughing at people who would say, it's not aliens, it's demons. I couldn't laugh anymore. I'm not so sure about that.
There is a very, very strong link between what people think demons are from the Bible and other religions and the UFO phenomenon. And what you have is something that doesn't like man, period, and something that feels either jealous of or has some kind of plan for what man is to be. And that just makes it that much worse when you think about it. I have a quote here I should read you. It says, and this is from one of the advisors, "Would the link of aliens creating man, who then created God to keep us in our place, be something worth keeping secret?" Mind you, secret with a K, which is how we do secret machines. So I think so. We're talking about the biggest institutions on the planet and the world's major religions. It's bigger than just the big bad U.S. government, and going back to the Greeks and including Russians and Germans make it sufficiently global across centuries. Maybe evidence of disappeared ancient cultures, Easter Island, the Maya, the Inca. That's evidence of what happened for those who did not obey, thus encouraging the secret to be kept. And could the story evolve from how men exploited, different groups of men exploited this technology to see how the entire secret is uncovered, rewriting world history and shattering many of our most well-regarded holy institutions, except this time when they come to wipe us out like the other ones, we are actually ready for them. And that readiness is another example why things have been kept quiet for so long and has been a strange international partnership indeed.
But now they're allowing some of it to dribble out. I would hope that some of your advisors are listening tonight.
I'm telling you that this whole story, and I remember when I got this specific communication, it made me feel more empowered. You know, we think that there's like this crazy conspiracy going on and this big cover up, and maybe to some effect that's what you can call it, but really this is the sequence of events. In Germany, they had some crashes. They started doing some advanced work. In World War II, right after World War II, we had some crashes. Maybe Russia had some crashes. Everyone factionalizes around that period of time. Maybe China had some crashes. We cover the whole thing up. No one really knows about it. But what we really did is we went into these incredibly secret places, underground or whatever these bases are, places that are out in Nevada and all over the world, and we started working like crazy with the brightest minds, with huge amounts of money, with just with passion and with resilience and with everything at our disposal to come up with a way to protect everybody. You know, anti-gravity craft, different weapons and space, different psychological operations that we play on the public. You know, I think part of the cover-up is a psychological operation, so the UFO occupants themselves still think we know nothing about them. And I think that's part of the plan, is part of it. You know, everything has been a big chess game to make the others not know how far along we've gotten to fight back. And I think that is something people need to know. And once again, I'm going to say it here, you know, I'm going to keep saying the same thing over and over again. You know, I think once people learn this stuff, they're going to lose a lot of cynicism about the government.
Let's take a couple of calls. Wildcard line, Rosie in Tucson. Hi, Rosie. You're on with Tom DeLong.
Hi, George. Thank you for having me. And Tom, I just want to say I've been seems now like a lifelong fan of you. I followed your entire career, and you're actually one of the people that really got me interested in the whole phenomenon or whatever you want to call it. So I've been really interested in everything that you've been doing lately. But I wanted to ask you a question about your camping experience that you talked about in the beginning, saying your experiment that you did, which I'm very familiar with, the meditation, I guess they call it the CE5. And I wanted to know if you have done that experience since then, or if you still believe that, you know, is something relevant, or and also if what you experienced, do you think it was the others, or, you know, what you've learned to of these beings being?
That's a good question. Years ago, Jacques Vallée, you hear George and I talk about him a lot, astrophysicist from France, the godfather of ufology. In his book, Invisible College, he talks about that same thing happening, a guy that can meditate and make these things show up. He brought the guy to the Pentagon, and out of the window, I think it was a colonel or something, the guy made a UFO show up, and it's in his book. Well, I happen to know a guy that can do that, and I'm hoping and have every reason to believe that he will be in the documentary and he'll do it for us. And this is a kid, I think he's like 22 years old. He lives in Los Angeles, and he goes out every Sunday and makes these orbs appear, because these things, just these little machines, just drones or whatever, just sit there and wait for somebody to do that meditation protocol. And then it senses the frequency of somebody wanting to see it, and then it decloaks itself for people to see. But this kid does it every Sunday. I've met him before, and I've seen all of the videos of, because they video it every time they go out. It's crazy. So when I went camping, you know, my experience was so odd, and I've read, like I said earlier, I've read about it before. What do I think it was? Yeah, I definitely think it was something to do with this entire phenomenon. Absolutely. But only, you know, somebody else witnessed it with me. The other person slept right through it. But I think there's something to do with meditation and the way the brain works when you meditate that has something to do with this phenomenon. There's, you know, we have a tendency to call it interdimensional, or we have a tendency to call it supernatural, but really, you know, if we look up and we see a bunch of stars in the sky, but if we put on really expensive night vision goggles, you'll see like millions of more stars. That's not supernatural. It's just a lot of light that your eyes can't pick up. It's all still there. This phenomenon is a very just real. It's machines. It's with, you know, living things in these machines, and they're doing very physical things. They just move very fast. And they might be a bit invisible because of the way the machine works. So, but the whole thing with consciousness, you know, I posed a really interesting question to my advisor, one of the 10 advisors I have, about a week ago when they found gravity. I thought about it for a little bit, and then I sent a message where I said, "Is gravity consciousness? Is that what gravity is? You know, the one thing that binds the universe together, but it's also the hardest thing to detect, but the most powerful thing there is." You know, maybe it's the exact same thing. And so when they found gravity and announced it in the press, I got a very specific communication from the advisors that said, "This is going to open up doors for you." And when I think about consciousness and meditating and these things popping up and gravity having something to do with how they fly around, whatever, there's something really interesting about that, and it's all coming out.
Yeah, there's a lot of high level interest in exactly those topics. It sounds crazy and exotic, but it's some of the brightest people that I know are thinking exactly along those lines. We're going to go to the Wild Card 2 line, Robert in Baltimore. Hi, Robert.
Tom. George, what you said before about the impact on people is very, very significant. I think it can be a very great impact. But the key issue here, Tom, is not your covering of new information. In fact, everything you've talked about tonight, I have heard from many other sources, because I listen to this stuff quite a bit. There are hundreds of books on UFOs. Linda Moulton Howe has herself made maybe over 100 videos that are available on the Internet. There are many hundreds of others. In regard to what you just talked about with regard to the meditation and the what amounts to stimulating the pineal gland so that the telepathic capabilities of the human are more stimulated. Stephen Greer now has groups all around the earth who are doing this kind of thing, and they can call up the UFOs when they would like to have them come, and they are doing that. And there are many videos about that available. I counted 500 videos on the internet availability on YouTube.
Do you have a question for Tom? Robert, do you have a question?
My question is, do you realize that that isn't the issue? Most of the things you've talked about are already very well known, and I suspect that you may not be aware that the question is letting the public see it. And there have been 10 or 15 movies that have done exactly what you're trying to do, but the public doesn't get to see them except occasionally on cable TV, like The Hidden Hand is one movie that comes to mind, but there are another 10. I don't know whether you've had the time to look at all of these other things, but how...
So, Robert, I'm going to ask you one more time. Do you have a question for Tom?
Okay, yeah, my question is, how are you going to get any better distribution of your material, which I believe is the same as we've seen, to the public any more than they're getting now? The cable companies have turned off all of the UFO shows. They've been taken off of all of the on-demand. Do you think you're going to get distribution? Can you stop the CIA from blocking distribution and the Men in Black from...
All right, let's hear what let's hear the answer. Thank you, Robert. Thanks for the question.
No, I appreciate everything that he said. I know of all the videos. I speak to Linda Howe all the time. Not all the time, but quite a number of times. I know a lot of the researchers. I've read all the hundreds of books out there. So I'm very familiar with everything he's talking about, or everything you, sir, have been talking about. The difference with my project now is basically you're asking, what information am I giving that isn't already out there? And the second thing is, how am I going to get my stuff out there and have it not be shut down, or how am I going to get it out there on a large level? The stuff that is being given to me of who they are and what they're doing and why it's being kept secret and what pieces are connected to it, the difference is I'm getting direct answers about specific things. And all this stuff exists out there in some form, but nobody knows how to traverse the information and pull out what's fact. Nobody knows. You can go out there and read 200 books, but all you have is 200 books worth of information, and you have not a damn clue what any of it, if it's fact or not. What I'm doing is getting the very big answers or questions answered, and then I'm taking that, and then the second part of what you asked was, how am I going to get it out there? Well, I'm just, because of what I've done for a living and who I'm represented by and how I work within the entertainment industry, I'm just able to do it at a different level. And the fact that I'm working with these people in the government, I'm able to bring something that's of extreme and different value to entertainment companies, to studios, to production companies, and it goes a long way. What we haven't said is the docuseries that I am doing about how I met these guys and the information that I'm going to be telling people in the entire project, we are doing with a major network, and I can't announce who that is just yet, but I think that's going to help give the kind of stamp of credibility that everybody's going to hope this project has.
I guess maybe where Robert was heading with that question was whether if they pull the rug out from under you, somebody could change their mind.
Well, they could, and you know as well as I, and some of our offline conversations is, we're playing with something that's much bigger than us, and we got to be respectful, and we got to be careful. But my story here is that. Once people know what's going on, there's no one's going to be vilifying anything that they've done. They're gonna want to help, and I think that they need to. I'm thinking that the very first thing I was told at NASA was this is a very good time for this. This is a quote very very good time for this project. So I'm sensing good things.
Well, that's sort of how we started the conversation this evening, is the idea that somebody has almost like flipped the light switch, that we don't exactly know for sure why it's a good time, but I'm glad that we're able to talk about it. And in a moment, we'll open up the phone lines again after the break and take more of your questions and comments from my guest, Tom DeLonge, here on Coast to Coast AM. The Beatles, Tomorrow Never Knows, the final track of an amazing album released 50 years ago this year. It's called Revolver. We're talking with Tom DeLonge. One segment remains. The phone lines look pretty full, So, folks, when I call on you, let's get right to it so we can be courteous with the rest of the folks who are waiting to ask their questions or make their comments. One segment remains. Stay with us. Our final segment with Tom DeLong. We're going to JJ in Washington State. Hi, JJ. You're on with Tom.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call. Tom, it's an honor to talk to you. I've been listening to your music for about 20 years, seen you in concert a bunch of times, and a real fan of yours, and looking forward to what you're working on right now. So my question is, you've mentioned China Lake a couple times, going out there and whatnot, and I'm familiar with the area. I have some connections there myself. But I'm just curious because your former bandmate, Mark Hoppus, is originally from Ridgecrest, California, right there next to it. And if I understand right, his father used to work there at China Lake. So I was just wondering, did he ever make mention of any kind of secret stuff that he was working on there, or did that kind of spark your interest early on from, like, your interest in UFOs and all that stuff?
That's a pretty great question, and I applaud you for knowing that detail. Yeah, he is from out there, and his dad worked on some incredible special access programs. I tried to pry into that box a couple of times, got denied. So that was early on. Maybe my pitch wasn't so good, but he definitely is somebody that worked on some really cool stuff.
I would add that China Lake, at least from based on what people have told me, has a lot of really interesting connections to this particular topic and to Area 51. Some of the same people go back and forth, but I can't quote any specifics on it. Thanks for the call, though, JJ. We're going to try a first-time caller, Jeannie, in Austin, Texas. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, guys. Tom, I just wanted to tell you that unless your show is like on Showtime, HBO, I would feel like you were being censored, and I wouldn't have any interest in it. I mean, I know that I don't know how else to say it. Maybe I'm the cynical, you know, part of all this. And then second thing I want to tell you is, why are you alive and you were given the opportunity when filmmakers like James Allen, who I personally think was killed when he got too close to finding out information about anti-gravity vehicles and was doing a documentary? I don't get it.
I appreciate it. You know, it's funny. I'm already in the middle of meeting those same networks that you're talking about, and I hope that we can end up in a place as elevated like that. It's a whole new frontier in television and film. There's a lot of different places. You know, never would have thought a place like Amazon would have been one of the best networks to be on. No one, you never would have thought Netflix would have been. Now Showtime's kind of considered cooler, and sometimes HBO. And HBO was the coolest thing for a while. It's just, it constantly changes. So I'm pretty confident we'll end up somewhere good. As far as, you know, why was I given this? I touched on this a little bit earlier in the show, but it's a super important question. Number one, you know, I have access to these people because of what I do for a living. And as long as I don't mention the whole UFO thing, I can pretty much meet whoever. But once I get in there, I'm very respectful, and I'm very passionate, and I'm very knowledgeable about the subject. What you might not have heard earlier is that I presented a thesis that made its way through the DOD that in turn got me a meeting with someone that was deep in intelligence out in Washington, D.C. So it was that thesis and the kind of academic nature of it that got people interested in talking to me, not only because of who I was, but because I seemed to have, an elevated knowledge of the subject matter. And then after that, the main reason why they continued to work with me and really gathered around in support of the project is because I executed in a way on many different things that are frankly pretty hard to do. And over a year and a half, the way I've done that, releasing everything step by step and gathering all these different people from different places in the government and bringing them all together and holding very high-level meetings, like very high-level meetings between Washington, D.C., and the people that I'm working with, I think all these things combined really created just a canvas for something new to happen. But I do understand it. I get that
people are like, why you? You're like, you play in a band. Like, how did you do this? Well, you know, it's kind of a long story, but that's why the docu-series that will be coming out will be explaining this in more detail.
And I guess the answer to the question why he hasn't been killed is because Tom is doing something with their okay at the moment. And whether or not anybody else has been killed for getting too close to the secret, I'm not quite sure about that. But thank you for the call, Jeannie. We're going to go west of the Rockies. Ernest. Hi, Ernest. You're on with Tom DeLong.
Hey, George, thanks for taking my call. Hello, Mr. DeLong, and I'm with some of the other ones. Let me just say this first. You keep saying religious wars. I think that was the end, 1600s? But anyway, how do you know you're not being used as disinformation, first of all? And second of all, if these aliens crashed, you know, that just shows that they're fallible. They can make mistakes. And Bill, I think he was on your show, George, Bill, he did the UFO show, and he said that he was, and somebody's lying then, because that sheriff who came up on that cattle mutilation said that he saw a human head and a hand in that cow. And Bill said it was because he got too close taking pictures from the hotel room of airplanes flying into Area 51 and he was taking those serial numbers, and somebody told him that he was getting too close to these bovine serum is close to human serum, and he said that he was getting really too close, and he upset people that, to quote him, he said that were bigger than you, meaner than you, or ugly.
Okay, and well, you've asked several questions. Let's give Tom a chance to tackle them. First one was about how do you know you're not being used for disinformation?
Well, because of the conditions of how I met these people, how I brought them together, and the way the relationship works. And these are not, I know exactly who they are. I know their full bios. I know their current positions, and they're not counterintelligence people.
You sought them out. Right.
It would just be a different situation if they were different people. The second thing is, about the religious wars. There still are religious wars going on, obviously, today. And based on people's very, very deep belief systems, we've been over in the Middle East for a very long period of time, and there's some really horrible things that are going on over there. But, mentioning UFOs being fallible, that might be the case. They might be fallible, or they might be crashing on purpose. The way it's been explained to me is that either by accident or by design, the effect of those crashes is giving greater weapons of war to the people that are fighting each other here on the planet, meaning our country against this country or our country, against this group that has this belief system. And that is what they're looking at. It's not so much, how it crashed. It's more like, well, what are the effects of it? And I think that's what makes this a little bit more scary.
And on the point of cattle mutilations, I don't think your group is saying that all cattle mutilations are carried out by aliens or the others. We've had some discussions about on the program before that there might be other folks who are operating under the umbrella of that stuff, very human people who are carrying out similar kind of operations for their own purposes. But did you get any insight onto the cattle mutilation stuff?
Yes, I did. But I go in for very specific people. Once again, I think, people are going to be very, very emotional about all this stuff, especially if you spent your whole life reading all of the conspiracy stuff out there about UFOs, and you think you have the full picture because you read all these books or all the websites, and you're absolutely sure that this is how it is because I saw this weird website that talked about this one thing. I'm not out to prove that this stuff's real. I'm out to tell people answers to very specific questions. So when it comes to the cattle mutilations, I go and I ask a very specific question about the cattle mutilations, and I get a very specific answer. Yes, it is the UFO phenomenon doing it. But I don't go in there and say, well, how many are real, or when they find gas masks, are you guys dropping those off just to, like, make people think it's all human so no one gets scared? Or, I don't get into all those details. These people, they're too important to deal with my laundry list of thousands of other questions that I wish I could ask.
east of the Rockies, John in St. Louis. Hi, John, you're on with Tom. Good morning.
Good morning, George. Good morning, Tom. Very interesting. Long-time listener. I got a comment and then a question, and I'll try to make it quick. The comment is that my worldview, this all does make sense. Things seem to be, different phenomena seem to be tied together, and it seems like, catch me if you can, you know, I'm over here. No, I'm over here. You know, like they're fooling with mankind. And my worldview is that, first of all, life is a miracle. Einstein said as much. You know, there's a spiritual world. We just celebrated Easter. Here you have a man in history that it's no doubt he's the most famous one person in the entire world. He defied the laws of physics, all the miracles he did. He defied the laws of physics, doing all these miracles. Okay, he could do it because he wrote the laws of physics. And I think the Bible explains, has a lot to do with what we see about the UFOs. There's that famous Italian painting with the two aerodynamic things chasing in the background with the crucifixion with the three on Calvary. So there's a lot of mystery to it. But the Bible does say that in the end time, that Satan has the power of the air, that it is demonic, and the whole big picture is they're trying to deceive mankind.
Okay, John, I'm going to have to ask you to get to the question part of it.
Okay, the question is what does he think about that? And also, what does he say? I believe Tom is very sincere on this, but you know, there's a lot of movies and books and all this stuff is for profit. And that's a red flag. Whenever that you delve into that, because there's a money motivation. I'm not
okay. We're going to let hear what he has to say about that.
Well, I think number one, the Bible is a very, very important book in all of this stuff, as so are a lot of other religious books that are out there. I think that that when you look into the way religions have written text, you know, how the text points to gods in the sky with their various vehicles and, you know, what they're doing and how the world got created and all these different things. I think everyone's talking about the same stuff. The way it's been explained to me, and I know a lot of, you know, I was raised like a lot of suburban kids were, going to church every Sunday. My mom was a very religious lady. She was a Christian. My household was kind of split down the middle, but I'm very familiar with the Christian religion. That was a major part of my life. I'm not with that faith anymore, but I understand what the Bible is, and I understand, you know, what it means to people. But what's interesting is I moved away from it for many years, and when I got deeper into this subject matter, it seemed to make a lot more sense to me. I'm from a different belief system that mankind has created the religions, but the stories are very important. The stories are saying something, and they're all saying the same thing about a bunch of people that came here from somewhere else, and there's one group, yes, trying to deceive mankind and hates mankind, and then, you know, there's another part of it that doesn't feel that way about man. So, but I'm not a religious scholar, but I think there's something that, you know, I've once heard the Bible referred to as, you know, it's the guidebook of the supernatural, you know, and I go, well, that might be a better way to call it for someone like me. But coming back to like doing things for profit, books and movies, well, yeah, it takes, but you know, if anybody has any clue how much it costs to make a movie, you know, think about the show House of Cards. You're like, oh, it's a TV show. It costs $100 million. To make 20 episodes, $100 million. So the only way you can make something that speaks internationally to that many people on that level, you need to be able to create something that is compelling enough for someone to say, I'm going to put $100 million into that television episode or that one movie, and then I'm going to put in another $100 million to market that. So how the hell are we going to get back $200 million? It's a big business. It's a very complex business, but it happens to be our biggest export as a country. So I'm doing it the best I can, but it's just the reality and the economics of how entertainment works.
Yeah, well, I guess we could all work for free, you know, and then it wouldn't cost anything, you know, if everybody agreed to work for free. Who's in? I'll see a show of hands. We're going to try the international line. Dave in Toronto. Hi, Dave.
Just speak with you both. And Tom, I think you're right on the money. One of my best contribution so far in this fight on the battlefield Earth so far has been to put out a series of books about deep underground military bases and repelling an alien invasion of the Greys. And I make a nod in my books to the Gnostic myths of the Archons. Are these others you're talking about the Archons, or I've also heard you reference it could be the Anunnaki? I just wanted you to maybe speak to that a little bit. And have you heard anything about benevolent aliens as well? Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, because what you just said is you're hitting it right on the money. There are massive programs underground and in other places to create a global defense system. Largely, a lot of it was done in the 80s. The SDI, the Reagan Star Wars Defense Initiative, was part of it. And we were doing that in collaboration with the Soviet Union. A lot of people thought we were at each other's throats, which we kind of were, but we were also working with them in certain parts of their government on the whole SDI system. And I think that was a lot of that is what led to Reagan and Gorbachev getting along and forming some type of a friendship there. But the other thing that you said, bringing up the Anunnaki and all that stuff, the way it was explained to me is, yes, there are good gods and bad gods, and their interactions with humanity has been well documented all the way back through Greek myth and then even further back into the Sumerian legends that are out there. I actually have communications that are detailing very specific leaders within Sumer and within ancient Greece, very specific people that I am being told to communicate that were given types of information from these gods. You know, it's insane. I don't to think about that. I don't have all the details. I have very specific things I'm supposed to do and say, and there's certain questions I have to ask to get more information, because it's going to be a very short discussion for me just to say what I've been told and not have anything else to go on. I think the point to really take from all of this is that those stories are true from the perspective of the people that wrote them, you know. So they differ in different areas of the world a little bit. You know, they call the gods different names, or they side with different gods. But the idea that there, right now there's three monotheistic faiths, and the rivalry between them is by design. Period. A communication that I had a few weeks ago is that human beings have a tendency to organize around religious belief systems as long as there is a priestly class, quote unquote, meaning that human beings will align behind different religions as long as there is a leader of that religion that they can kind of call their hero, and our government has known that, and they're actively trying to come up with a campaign to get people to understand that and not fall into that deception.
Thanks to all the callers. Tom, I appreciate you being here. I guess this was the rollout.
We have the Rolling Stone article is going to launch on the 8th. Secret Machines novel is in all the bookstores on the 5th. The docuseries is going to launch after that. I'm trying my hardest to get good information to everybody. I'm not going to get told everything, but the stuff that I have been told is just unreal and makes me excited. I think the people within the DOD are doing some incredible work, and it's damn time they get some what they deserve, which is some credit.
Tom DeLong, thanks very much for being here. And if your advisors are listening tonight, I hope there's more to come. Thank you also to A.J. Hartley, who was with us earlier, and to my colleagues at Coast, Jeff Duray, G. Lee, Dan Galati, our webmaster, Lex, and Chris Boros, the producer. Good night, everyone.